And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today's May 27th, 147th day of the year. 218 days remain until the year is over with. This day in history, 1096, Count Micio enters Mainz, where his followers massacred U.S. settlers. At least 600 victims of this senseless massacre. 1120, Richard III of Capua is anointed as prince 2 weeks before he died. Well, I guess better late than never. 1153, Malcolm IV becomes King of Scotland. 1199, John is crowned King of England. 1257, Richard of Cornwall and his wife Sanchia of Provence are crowned King and Queen of the Germans at Aachen Cathedral. 1644, Manchu Regent Dorgon defeats rebel leader Li Xingying of the Shun Dynasty at the Battle of Shanghai Pass, allowing the Manchus to enter and conquer the capital city of Beijing. 1703, Tsar Peter the Great founds the city of St. Petersburg. 1798, haven't you noticed the meanest folks in the world consider themselves saints? 1798, the Battle of Ullart Hill takes place in Wexford, Ireland. Irish rebel leaders defeat and kill a detachment of militia. 1799, War of the Second Coalition. Austrian forces defeat the French at Winterthur in Switzerland. 1813, War of 1812. In Canada, American forces capture Fort George. 1860, Giuseppe Garibaldi begins his attack on Palermo, Sicily. That was part of the Italian unification. When in doubt, just go kill a few folks. 1863, Civil War. First assault on the Confederate works at the siege of Port Hudson. 1874, the first group of Dorsland trekkers under the leadership of Gert Alberts leave Pretoria. Now, for those that are not familiar with the Dorka trekkers, that's the collected name for a series of explorations undertaken by Boer settlers from South Africa. This happened between 1874 and 1881. They were searching for political independence and better living conditions. The participants, known as Trek Boers, were migrating farmers. They came from the Orange Free State and Transvaal, and they're called Dorsland Trekkers. Not to be confused with Star Trekkers. 1883, Alexander III is crowned Tsar of Russia. 1896, the F4 strength St. Louis East St. Louis tornado hits St. Louis, Missouri, and East St. Louis, Illinois. Kills at least 255 people and causes over $10 million in damage in 1896 dollars. 1905, the Russo-Japanese War, Battle of Tsushima begins. In 1915, HMS Princess Irene explodes and sinks off Sheerness in Kent. 352 people die. 1917, Pope Benedict XV promulgates the 1917 Code of Canon Law. That's the first comprehensive codification of Catholic canon law in the legal history of the Catholic Church. 1919, NC-4 aircraft arrives in Lisbon after completing the first transatlantic flight. 1927, the Ford Motor Company ceases manufacture of the Ford Model T, begins to retool its plants to build the Ford Model A. 1930, the 1,046-foot Chrysler Building in New York City, the tallest man-made structure at the time, opens to the public. 1933, the New Deal, the U.S. Federal Securities Act is signed into law, requiring the registration of securities with the Federal Trade Commission. 1933, Walt Disney Company releases the cartoon Three Little Pigs. It has a hit song, Who's Afraid of the Big Bad Wolf? 1935, Supreme Court of the U.S. declares the National Industrial Recovery Act to be unconstitutional in ALA Schechter Poultry Corporation versus U.S. 1937, in California, the Golden Gate Bridge opens to pedestrian traffic, creating a vital link between San Francisco and Marin County, California. 1940, World War II. In the Les Paradres massacre, 99 soldiers from a Royal Norfolk Regiment unit are shot after surrendering to German troops. Two survived to bear witness to what happened. 1941, World War II, President Roosevelt proclaims an unlimited national emergency. Also in 1941, World War II, the German battleship Bismarck is sunk in the North Atlantic. Almost 2,100 men die in that sinking. That was supposed to be the most powerful battleship the world had ever seen. 1942, World War II, in Operation Anthropoid, Reinhard Heydrich is fatally wounded in Prague, dies of his injuries 8 days later. He was said to have been killed by partisans, but he wasn't. He was killed by a team dropped in by the British. Now, they were, in fact, locals, but they had been trained by the British. There was quite a bit of retaliation by the Germans for the killing of Heydrich. 1950, the Leninmäki amusement park is opened for the first time in Helsinki. 1958, the first flight of the McDonnell Douglas F-4 Phantom II takes place. 1960, in Turkey, a military coup removes President Salih Bayar and arrests the Democratic government from office. 1962, Centralia mine fires ignited in the town's landfill, which is right above a coal mine. 1965, Vietnam War. American warships began the first bombard of National Liberation Front targets from South Vietnam. 1967, Australians vote in favor of a constitutional referendum granting the Australian government the power to make laws to benefit Indigenous Australians to count them in the national census. Also in 67, U.S. Navy aircraft carrier USS John F. Kennedy is launched by Jacqueline Kennedy and her daughter Caroline. 1971, the rail train disaster, the worst railway accident in West Germany. 46 are killed and 25 are injured near Wuppertal. 1971, the Pakistani forces massacre over 200 civilians, mostly Bengali Hindus, in the Bagbati massacre. 1975, Dibbles Bridge coach crash near Grassington in North Yorkshire, England, kills 33, the highest death toll in a road accident in the United Kingdom. 1980, the Gwangju massacre. Airborne and army troops of South Korea retake the city of Gwangju from civil militias, kill at least 270 and wound quite a number. They don't really know how many were killed. It could have been much more than 207. That's just what was admitted to. 1984, the Danube Black Sea Canal is open. In a ceremony attended by the Ceausescu's, been under construction since the 1950s. 1996, the first Chechnya War. Russian President Boris Yeltsin meets with Chechen rebels for the first time and negotiates a ceasefire. 1997, the 1997 Central Texas tornado outbreak occurs. Multiple tornadoes take place in Central Texas, including the F5 that killed 27 in Giral. 1998, Oklahoma City bombing. Michael Fortier is sentenced to 12 years in prison and fined $200,000 for failing to warn authorities about the terrorist plot. 2001, members of the Islamist separatist group Abu Sayyaf seized 20 hostages from an affluent island resort in Palawan in the Philippines. This hostage crisis wouldn't be resolved until June of 2002. 2006, the 6.4 magnitude Yogyakarta earthquake shakes central Java with an MSK intensity of 8, which is considered damaging. Leaves more than 5,700 dead and 37,000 injured. 2016, Barack Obama is the first president of the U.S. to visit Hiroshima Peace Memorial Park and meet Abu Khrushchev. 2017, Andrew Scheer takes over after Rona Ambrose as the leader of the Conservative Party of Canada. And in 2018, Maryland flood event. A flood occurs throughout the Patapsco Valley, causing one death, destroys the entire first floors of buildings on Main Street in Ellicott City, and causes a number of cars to overturn. Well, there's been a lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Far too many to go into. Let's talk about holidays and observances. In Nicaragua, it's Armed Forces Day. Nigeria, it's Children's Day. Christian Feast Day, Augustine of Canterbury, Blessed Rosy Godsey, Bruno of Wurzburg, Eutropius of Orange, Hildebert, Julius the Veteran, Bolivia's Mother's Day. In Japan, it's Navy Day. Guadalupe, St. Bartholomew, and St. Martin, it's Slavery Abolition Day. And in Australia, it's the start of National Reconciliation Week. Now, let's see what else we have on this particular date in history. In 1927, the Battle of the Bosnian Highlands. Simeon I of Bulgaria is defeated by King Tomislav of Croatia. In 1281, Flemish Earl Wilde Dampierre takes financial responsibility of Brugge. 1529, 30 Jews of Pisening, Hungary, charged with a blood ritual, are burned at the stake. One's more barbaric than the other. 1660, Denmark and Sweden signed the Treaty of Copenhagen. That ends the Second Northern War. 1679, the Habeas Corpus Act is passed in England. That strengthens a person's right to challenge unlawful arrest and imprisonment. 1689, Antoni Heinsius succeeds G. Fagal in his Grand Pensionary of Holland. 1692, the Court of Oyer and Terminer, which translates as hear and determine, is established by the governor of Massachusetts to hear accusations of witchcraft. 1738, Turkish troops occupy Rosova and Ochakov in Eastern Europe. 1796, James McLean patents his piano. 1849, the opening of the Great Hall at Euston Station in London, which was considered quite the event. 1850, the Mormon Temple in Nauvoo, Illinois, destroyed by a tornado. 1854, the Marine Telegraph from Fort Point to San Francisco is completed. 1856, Dr. William Palmer, known as the Rugeley Poisoner, is found guilty of poisoning in Stafford, England. 1862, Battle of Hanover Courthouse in Virginia. 1863, CSS Chattahoochee explodes on the Chattahoochee River in Georgia. 18 are killed. Chattahoochee River runs right past Columbus. And all the cannons defending that town were thrown into the river at the end of the war, in the last battle in that area. Some friends and I went looking for them. 1863, siege of Port Hudson, Louisiana by Union forces. Lasts 48 days, the longest American military siege. 1873, Heinrich Schliemann discovers Priam's treasure, which is a cache of gold and silver objects in Hisarlik, or Troy, in Anatolia. He was an amateur archaeologist, and he went to an area he was assured there was nothing there, and he found Troy. 1883, Tsar Alexander III crowned in Moscow. 1895, British inventor Bert Akres patents the film camera and projector. 1900, Lord Robert's army fights the Vaal in South Africa. 1903, Wilhelmina of the Netherlands, who was quite a looker, I might add, opens Berlage's Merchants Bureau in Amsterdam. 1905, the Japanese fleet destroys the Russian East Sea Fleet in the Battle of Tsushima. That's the only decisive battle between modern steel battleships in history. 1907, on this date, bubonic plague breaks out in San Francisco. 1908, Maulana Hakim Nur ud-Din is elected the first Khalifa of Ahmadiyya Muslim community. 1916, groundbreaking begins on Hugh Grant Circle in Bronx in New York. 1916, Woodrow Wilson addresses the League to Enforce Peace. Interesting name. Which was founded in 1915 and gives public support to the idea of a League of Nations, which failed primarily because we wouldn't support it. 1917, it was a race riot in East St. Louis, Illinois. 1918, the Third Battle of Issendi. German offensive overcomes the British forces. This was World War I. 1919, the first transatlantic flight ends on this date. A U.S. Navy flying boat took 11 days to cross the Atlantic. 1927, there was Japanese intervention in the Chinese Civil War on this date. 1930, Richard Drew invents masking tape. 1931, Swiss Auguste Piccard and Paul Kipfer make the first flight into the stratosphere by balloon from Augsburg, Germany. 1933, the Austrian Communist Party is banned. 1933, Martin Heidegger gives his inaugural rectoral address on the self-assertion of the German university. A lot of people believe that his speech was in support of the Nazi regime. 1936, the RMS Queen Mary, who is now permanently docked in Long Beach, leaves Southampton for New York on her maiden voyage. 1940, British and American Allied forces begin the evacuation of Dunkirk during World War II. It was known as Operation Dynamo. They rescued almost 320,000 troops. If they hadn't been able to, the war would probably have lasted an additional year or two. And the doubt would have still been in doubt as who was going to win. 1941, FDR declares a state of emergency after a German U-boat sinks the American-flagged SS Robin Moore. 1942, Dory Miller awarded the Navy Cross for deeds at Pearl Harbor. 1942, Hitler orders 10,000 Czechs murdered because of the assassination of Heydrich. He was wounded by a grenade thrown by Czech rebels in Prague during Operation Anthropoid. He died a week later, but it was actually, as I said, two British-trained agents who were dropped in. 1942, the Italian army began siege of French Western Fort Bir Hakeim. 1943, French resistance under Jean Moulin meets secretly in Paris. 1944, the Allies land on Biak in Indonesia in Operation Horlicks. 1948, the Arabs blew up a Jewish synagogue. It was Havat Rabbi Rehuda Hay Hasid. 1951, the Chinese Communists forced the Dalai Lama to surrender his army to Beijing. Apparently, at one point in time, the Dalai Lama had an army. 1952, the European Defense Community is formed. 1953, the Dutch Social Democratic Dutch Liberal Party wins municipal elections. In 1956, the French raid Algiers. 1957, Toronto's CHUM AM 1050 kHz becomes Canada's first radio station to broadcast only top 40 rock and roll music. 1958, Ernest Green becomes the first African American to graduate from Little Rock Central High School. 1961, the first black light is sold, and potheads across the country celebrated. Well, on that note, we're going to take a little change of pace and talk about something that was brought to my attention yesterday. I've known for many, many years that underneath El Paso is quite a number of tunnels. And these tunnels, of course, go many, many places, places you wouldn't think. I'm not getting cooperation from my electronicals. There have been underground societies, literally underground societies, for more years than any of us know. When I was living in New York City, I was told about a secret subway station underneath the Waldorf that had belonged to one of the wealthy families. And you had to go down a special elevator, and it was just like they had walked off and left it. Art hanging on the walls. I mean, of course, it was dark and it was dirty, but still, if you knew how to get there, there's no problem in exploring. My system just shut itself down again. Now, living in the tunnels underneath New York City are what are known as mole people, also called tunnel dwellers. And they're homeless people who live underneath large cities in abandoned subway, railroad, flood, sewage tunnels, and heating shafts. In fact, in New York City, in the main library, there was a full-size picture of Christ that swung out from the wall, and there was a stairway that took you down to where the mole people live. Now, New York City is known as the home of some impressive attractions. Broadway, Wall Street, the Statue of Liberty, World Trade Center, and a lot of other places that attract thousands of visitors every year. And people all over the world dream about moving to New York City to start a life in the U.S. But because of COVID and many other things, not to mention moronic leadership, New York City is not what it once was. In fact, there are over 300 people a day leaving, according to some reports. And some might call these the lucky ones because there are thousands of homeless in the city that can't find the resources to leave. Now, there's a staggering number of homeless in New York. We lived in Trump Tower, and when we'd walk outside to go someplace, we would see their air return vents set into the sidewalk that allow the purging of the heat that builds up underneath the buildings. And there would be people sleeping on those vents for the warmth. And when it snowed, there'd be little mounds of snow covering the people that were sleeping there. Some people who say they count these things believe there's more than 60,000 people living in New York City that don't have a home. And there are said to be over 2,000 living underground in New York. But there are others that say that number is much higher. Now, the mole people, as they're called, live one of the most popular parts of the city without the folks who walk the streets ever knowing they're there. They travel under cover of darkness so as not to be evicted from their underground homes by authorities. But there are some, as I said earlier, very nice places to live if you can get down to them, such as the abandoned subway station underneath the Waldorf. Now, numerous sections of the New York subways have long since been abandoned, and they once carried people throughout the city. Some, like Track 61, is no longer in use. But instead of being cleaned out by the powers that be, they're used as dumping places for old rail cars and other forgotten things. And some of these tunnels go deep underneath the city. And, of course, they're not patrolled. Ever since the Great Depression, there have been many homeless people in New York City. During that period, folks started using the subway tunnels as a place to live. I mean, there's water. If you have the knowledge to do it, there are underground electrical cables you can hook into for power. And since underneath the ground, it is 72 degrees year-round, generally, and through the tunnels, there's fresh air coming in. So the homeless population has grown in that city, and so has the number of people living underground. Now, in New York, the weather's relentless. In fact, it got so cold it froze the transmission on our car, and it was in a garage. Those who don't have homes are at the mercy of the elements during freezing nights, so they look for shelter anywhere they can find. And abandoned places such as abandoned subway stations and tunnels are perfect places for refuge. Now, the places where homeless people live underground, of course, are dangerous. Rodents, reptiles lurk through the tunnels. I was present when some workers pulled an 8-foot alligator out of a sewer in New York City. And there have been stories for many, many years about the fact there were much bigger alligators than that living underneath the city. And the darkness conceals criminals, and as a result, mole people are often the victims of attack. Even what little they have is attracted to thieves. Now, the entrances to the subway tunnel is easily accessible by anybody who has the desire to venture into them. There are numerous entrances throughout the city. Now, it's illegal to enter, and going into them can get you hit with criminal charges, but the police aren't going to chase you. And just like any place that numerous people live, the mole people actually have their own community. And they look out for each other, but there's also a kind of hierarchy. And most of them are very territorial over the sections of the tunnel where they live. I mean, it's their home. And there are couples, even families, that live underground. And the sad part of it is these people risk losing their kids if authorities find out that they don't have a place to live. So families living in the subway do their best to stay concealed. And people are not the only ones living in the subway tunnels underneath New York City. A lot of animals live there as well, and some of the mole people even domesticate these animals and keep them as pets. Now, the mole people do anything they can to eat and obtain the things they need, and it's difficult for them, no question about it. They have to wait till it's dark to emerge from their homes to scavenge for what food they can find. And they're just like everybody else. They enjoy the same things you and I do. But it's harder for them to do something, like read a book, because they don't have electricity. So they use a light that comes in through ventilation grates. Now, some of the abandoned subway sections of beneath the city are absolutely beautiful. They feature ornate decorations, stained glasses, and the parts featuring windows offer natural light and appear to be cleaner than the darker sections. In fact, if you're homeless, looks like a pretty good place to live. Now, despite the areas of the subway that are beautiful and have natural light, the mole people seem to prefer the darker sections. And the reasons for that's very simple. The shaded parts offer protection from transit authority personnel, and police will kick them out if they find them. Now, throughout the years, the city has made efforts to clean sections of the subway tunnel. But the system is so vast, and nobody really knows all of it, that many abandoned areas remain completely untouched, especially those parts of the subway system that are no longer in use. I mean, as the old saying goes, out of sight, out of mind, when you've got limited resources, you're going to spend it on the areas that can do the most good. Now, some of the people living underground don't venture into unknown areas. They choose instead to sleep on operating platforms in plain sight of the people walking around them. They sleep on public benches or even on the floors, steps away from the subway trains. And another popular place for them to sleep is the subway itself. They get on in riders for as long as possible. And with so many people getting on and off, they can usually remain unnoticed for quite a while before somebody takes it upon themselves to kick them off. And just like ordinary people, some of the folks riding the trains for refuge are dirtier than others. They throw trash around, they clutter up the cars with their belongings. But you can't really blame them for wanting to keep what little they have close to them. And during the coldest nights, the number of people underground is much higher than normal. Now, most of these people typically go above ground and find a shelter place to sleep. But during the freezing temperatures, sleeping on a park bench is somewhat dangerous. So they wear whatever clothes they have and cover themselves anything they can find to avoid hypothermia. Quite often you'll see them sleeping underneath cardboard. Now, people living in abandoned places underground have been forgotten for years. After being there for a long time, it's difficult for them to figure out how to get out. So the city now has the job of helping them find their way back into society. And the question is, what's the best way to do that? Now, Now, there are, of course, thousands of people living in the darkness of the subway tunnels. And 20 years after New York City made a major effort to relocate its tunnel-dwelling denizens, a few souls are still refusing to move. Now, there was an investigation conducted a short time ago. And reading from the report that was filed, the mouth of the tunnels, wide and dark, swallowing the light and all that it breathes. Rubble is scattered along the train tracks. Now, the entrance they found was by the parkway, with the blasting trucks and the roaring cars, and near the filigree arches of the Riverside Drive Viaduct. And this is where live the mole people, deep in the depths of the city, way underground, lying in the dirt. You know about them. They've always been there, resting low below the rowdy streets and carving avenues. And you've heard the rumors, of course. Now, their eyes have adapted to the constant night that cloaks them from the topside world. And they're eating rats and they're eating human flesh when there's nothing else available. And they want what topsiders have. And one day, the fear is they're going to come out and just overwhelm everybody. Now, there have been so many stories told about the mole people. There is a story in the New York Times and it appeared in print before it went in the online publication in 1996. Now the grate is 25 feet overhead of the reporter, and rats are scurrying across the dirt floor. But otherwise, the wide railroad tunnel beneath the Riverside Park is dark and peaceful. And it suits the needs of its inhabitants, who number maybe 100 and call themselves the mole people. Now, these men and women may be the most stable homeless settlement in New York City, although some of the old-timers would describe it that way. And after living 15 years in a tunnel, they don't consider themselves homeless. They have plywood shanties and cinder block bunkers with rugs and beds and nightstands and kerosene lamps and wooden gas stoves, paintings on the wall, even pets in the yard. But, according to the reporter, the quiet life alongside the Hudson River is becoming problematic, both for the mole people and its neighboring group of squatters called the Rotunda Gang, because they're home beneath the park's traffic circle at 79th Street. During the last 2 weeks before this report was published, the Parks Department had rousted the Rotunda Gang from the round arcade it inhabited for years. And down in the 2.5-mile-long tunnel, the Amtrak crews were laying track to bring trains through it for the first time in 10 years. So the mole people are afraid of being pushed out. And then there's the worrisome news that came to them from downtown: the evictions of the homeless from train stations and railway platforms. According to one mole person who was interviewed, he'd built a shanty on the railroad land last summer. He said, "We'd like to keep out the riffraff. We go to work in the morning. We don't steal. We don't do drugs." You know, the interesting thing about putting it in a local perspective, when I started exploring the tunnels underneath El Paso, I discovered that if you know how to navigate it, you can go miles underneath the city and never come above ground. And for many, many years, that was used by smugglers. In fact, a large portion of Joe Kennedy's bootleg booze came through the tunnels underneath El Paso. And over half the buildings, the historic buildings, have sub-basements even the owners don't know about. I was talking to a retired FBI agent, and he said they got a report that some explorers, they called themselves, had found some of Pancho Villa's hidden gold underneath one of the buildings here in town. Now, if you find something like that, you keep your mouth shut, you keep your head down, you convert it to cash and go on about your life. But one of these guys had to brag about how brilliant he was at finding the hidden treasure. Word got back to the FBI, and of course, at that point in time, the ownership of gold was outlawed. And Villa did hide a lot of treasure underneath El Paso. He always knew he was going to have to run one day. He didn't know he was going to be assassinated. So he had little hiding places of valuables. In fact, his brother moved to El Paso, and he bought a house over near what's called Five Points. And I talked to somebody. We used to go to estate sales all the time. There had been an estate sale at this house, and they only allowed so many people in at a time. So I was sitting out front talking to a guy, and he said that his brother had been a contractor, and the previous owner of the house asked him to come in and look about renovating the basement and turning into a, what used to be called a rumpus room back in the days when folks did rumpuses. And he said he was in the basement tapping on the wall and he found a hollow sound. So the owner told him to go ahead and take down the drywall and he found a door. And he opened the door and it's a room, and in the back, along the back wall were chests stacked about waist high. Well, the owner immediately ordered him to leave. And apparently, Via's brother had brought a lot of stolen wealth with him. And it was hidden in that room that had been covered up. You'll find a lot of the older houses have secret rooms. Not all of them are connected with Pancho Villa, of course, but you'll find unusual things hidden throughout some of the older houses. But the tunnels underneath El Paso, to give you an idea, University of Texas at El Paso, a very anti-military university, has a football stadium. And they spent a fortune taking care of it, and they had the ground as green as they could get, except for one patch about on the 50-yard line. And they brought in experts from all over to see if what was wrong. I mean, they heard guesses of, well, there's a steam tunnel somewhere around here, and the hot air is killing the roots of the grass. And while all these experts are standing there pontificating, the side pooches up like a boil. And then it flops back, and three undocumented immigrants crawled out of a tunnel that ran underneath the football field and ran down the 50-yard line. So you'll find tunnels in the strangest places. I did a video called El Paso, a City of Secrets, where I put some of those tunnels on the video camera. It's absolutely amazing what you can find when you get down there. Now, the people that you'll find there are not all old or very young. You'll find middle-aged men. And poverty doesn't respect barriers. They'll be black, white, green, purple, whatever, all colors, all races. Ethnicity is not a barrier to being poor. And that's why a lot of these people are there, because they have no place else to go. And you can't blame them. In fact, underneath El Paso was an actual city built by the Chinese. In 1881, I think it was, the railroad came to El Paso and the track had been laid by Chinese immigrants. And they were all got in the railroad yard and told what a wonderful job they had done, help us realize the American dream, you're all fired. They kept on about 10% of them. There were a couple of... There were over 1,000 of them. And they kept a few to do menial jobs in the railroad yard. Well, they were told they had to assimilate. And the problem is they assimilated too well. They were taking the jobs that should have gone to native-born. So what was called the Chinese Exclusion Act was passed. It was supposed to be a temporary law that would stay in effect for 10 years. It stayed in effect until 1943. But if you were here and you could show you had employment, you could stay. But no new immigrants could come in. The Mexicans did the same thing, because quite often these Chinese descendants would be very wealthy people. They worked hard and they saved their money and they invested wisely. They passed a Chinese exclusion bill in Mexico. And here, they weren't robbed, per se. In Mexico, they took everything they had, marched them to the border, and told them to go. Well, our folks caught them and sent them back. And they would do this, you know, several times. Reading the Chinese exclusion stories just makes you sad to be on the border. But unfortunately, it's a fact of life. Well, since they were so good at tunnels, and they were physically small people for the most part, they took a lot of the steam tunnels underneath El Paso and built connecting tunnels and created an underground economy. They also, there was a Chinatown here that covered several blocks. And underneath Chinatown were opium dens and everything else you could imagine. Well, there was a city under there. In fact, it's under the railroad yard. It's still there. And a lot of immigrants that were smuggled in were taken to the underground city. Now, the research that I did talked about buildings in the railroad yard area that had secret underground sub-basements. And from there, you got to the city. And those basements are gone, but the entrances are still there. Makes fascinating reading. In New York City, there's sewer grates all over the city, of course. And people walk over them and think nothing of it, but there's a real honest-to-God world underground. And I've talked to people I know that live in quite a number of cities across the country, and they've all got stories of underground cities. Some of them have been opened up for tourism. But until I started writing about it, most folks had no idea about what's underneath the ground at El Paso. But there is a different type of human history of the world underneath our feet. Now, I was in the subway tunnels of New York. I've been in the tunnels of Nashville. I've been in the tunnels of Chattanooga. If you haven't lived, you've been in some of the tunnels underneath Chattanooga. If you ever heard about Rock City, that's right outside the city, and there are tunnels that lead there. Now, there are... in fact, there's one case in New York that you'll find fascinating. There was a graffiti writer by the name of Revs, and he spent 6 years writing his autobiography on the walls of the subway tunnels between the platforms in the sort of the dark spaces that are hard to reach and covered in soot, which is pretty much like a no man's land. And he'd go there and put up a 5x7 foot rectangle of white or yellow paint and write a little vignette from his childhood on the panel. And he numbered them with a series. He created a series and he would sign them. There's about 235 or 40 of these scattered throughout New York City. Now, the mole people as such are a separate culture. I mean, you might look at them as just throwaway people, but they're not. Some of the smartest folks I've ever had a conversation with were mole people. During the 80s, they were everywhere in the underground of New York. There's a lot of fewer of them today, but... And there's the tunnel that runs under the Riverside Park that I spoke about earlier. That's where they used to live. And they even built a town down in that tunnel. It's called the Freedom Tunnel. Now, the... And some people have spent lifetimes living there. And if offered the opportunity to leave, they wouldn't do it. Which makes you kind of wonder, how is living in a tunnel better than living in a house? Now, at first, the sewer feels, or even the tunnels, feels kind of repulsive. It's got a peculiar odor to it. And there are long, stringy strands of bacteria that hang down. Urban explorers refer to them as snot sickles. But, and a lot of the tunnels have wastewater that flows through the tunnel. But there are those that I was in one tunnel in New York City. We were walking on a ledge, and the water in the tunnel, I was told, was over 11 feet deep. And it had quite a current to it. And that's one of the areas where I was insured that we would run into alligators. Now, we didn't see one. We did see tracks. Now, some cities like Paris have turned their underground tunnels into tourist attractions. The catacombs, you can walk down a tunnel lined with skulls and bones. Runs about a mile, and that's open to the tourist. And beyond that, there are another 200 miles of catacombs. Well, the one in El Paso is over 900 miles in extent. I don't think anybody has explored it all by any means. But certainly, if you have the opportunity to explore the tunnels, you really ought to do it. I was approached by, in fact, I got a phone call from somebody from Homeland Security. Want to take me to lunch and ask me questions. I said, sure, why not? First thing they wanted to know, did I know where entrances to the tunnels were? And I said, yeah. When I tell them, and I said, why you want to know? I mean, you're Homeland Security, for God's sake. Oh, well, we're going to seal them up. I said, I'm not going to tell you. Because one day I may want to do tunnel tours and charge people to go down there. And who may know when I want to escape from El Paso. But it became clear that with all the resources of Homeland Security, they had no idea what was underneath their feet. And yet, within 5 miles of where we were sitting, there were people bringing drugs and conducting human trafficking through those tunnels. There are way stations. There are rest areas for those in the tunnels. Some of them have better air conditioning than a lot of people's homes do. Because many of our utilities now run underground. And all you got to do is have the wherewithal and the knowledge to hook into it. And who knows where you can go. Or what you can do. The sad thing is, they really are at a loss as to how to deal with this. In San Diego, they had an architect design the entrance to the tunnel that ran from Tijuana into Juarez. The problem is, he was about 10 feet short when they dug up. Instead of coming up in the basement of the building they wanted to come up with in, they came up in the parking lot. So they put a tent. And nobody bothered to look in the tent for quite some time. And when the tunnel was found, it had a little tram, it had electricity, it had air conditioning, it had lights. And this had gone on under the nose of the powers that be for quite some time. The problem for those that are trying to deal with the security of the border is these tunnels, some of them date back over 200 years. I've got photographs showing railroad iron being used to construct the roof of some of these tunnels, and they open right on the Rio Grande. There's no door. You just walk in. And this has been going on since, 1881 is when the Chinese started really delving underground. So El Paso's been around. There was a community here going back into the early 1800s. and has always been smuggling. You can't stop it. It's endemic. The fascinating thing, especially here in El Paso with the Chinese city, there are homes there that are described to me as every bit as ornate as anything you can find above ground, and they're still there. There are people who still live there. Which raises some interesting ideas. When they were built, one of the places they built Fort Bliss was right on the border. The only problem is the surveyor who laid it out forgot about the fact that a man with a rifle on high ground can shoot anybody down below him. So there were hills overlooking the parade ground from several different areas. But what they did is immediately dug tunnels underneath the Rio Grande into the military buildings. Some of the quarters are still there. And I'm told if you know how to do it, you can go into the basement, into the sub-basement, underneath the Rio Grande, and hell, you're in Juarez. These type of things give rise to quite a number of interesting issues, I guess you could say. And the problem, the real problem, is you don't know who's coming through those tunnels. In Las Cruces, which is 40 miles from here, it's right in New Mexico. One house we looked at, there was a tunnel from the basement underneath the street to the house next door. On the other side of the street, because that used to be the servants' quarters for the house. And from that house across the street, you could go down to the river, and that's how they were making their money, bringing stuff in illegally. The stories you could hear, and 9 times out of 10 when you research them, you find that there is truth to quite a number of them. So we're going to be talking about more the mole people's stories, along with military encounters with extraterrestrials. You never know what kind of story you're going to come up with, so you don't need to miss a single episode. I also want to talk about probably one of the most interesting people I've come across. His name is Raymond. He's with Cherokee Process Servers. If the person's not dead, he'll serve them. And he is very good. He's very sophisticated in his approach. And he's a trip to talk to. We're going to be interviewing him in the not-too-distant future. For now, we've run out of time. So until tomorrow at this time, this is Ken Hudnall for The Ken Hudnall Show saying have a truly great evening.